FM with our radio app. It's on-the-go listening made easy. You can tune into all our music, spoken word, and multicultural shows using your device. Our app lets you set reminders so you'll never miss your favorite show again. Stay connected to CGSF 90.1 FM through our community radio app. Download the app from the Apple Store or get it on Google Play.
This is The Scoop, a weekly regional roundup of stories from remote radio stations in British Columbia. Each week, The Scoop features news created by fellow LJI journalists in the communities of Smithers, Prince George, Nanaimo, Burnaby, and the Comox Valley. LJI is the local journalism initiative, and it's how your best local news is funded on these participating stations. Now, let's see what's happening this week in BC.
A Burnaby City Council meeting was interrupted by local activists this week who awarded the City Council with the Dinosaurs of 2025 award. Danny Nesvarandi from CJSF in Burnaby brings us that story. A new carbon sequestration development is taking shape in Prince George, and Ian Gregg at CFUR in Prince George reports. A new rendition of the Baba Yaga play in Nanaimo highlights women empowerment. Find out more from Lauren McKenzie at CHLY in Nanaimo. And Pam Hassan at CICK in Smithers dives into the development of PACE kits, a self-collection evidence kit for people who have been sexually assaulted. All that coming up on this episode of The Scoop. I'm Dan Messick.
The PACE kit, which will be available in the North shortly at Kasan Society in Terrace, was created as a way to encourage people who would likely not go to the hospital have an option of collecting their own DNA samples with the support of a registered social worker or sexual assault coordinator. Here's the sexual assault coordinator for the Northern Society for Domestic Peace in Smithers talking about the options with a PACE kit.
I think it's a fabulous idea for victims to be able to do that themselves. And very empowering. It's just how do we ensure that evidence doesn't get tossed later because it's deemed admissible somehow. That's a really great option. And the more we can empower people and take away that like shame and embarrassment and fear factor around that. Like so many times we see victims of sexual violence report to RCMP, and then through that investigation and through it going to Crown Council, it's determined there isn't enough there to move forward with charges. And that's the reality of the situation, but it's devastating for victims and survivors to feel like they did the right thing. They came forward, they reported, and it's nothing's going to come of it in court.
With the concerns that Erica has shared, let's now hear from the creator of the PACE kit, Chloe Hunt, to learn about the kit and its intended use.
My name is Chloe Hunt. I'm the founder of Forward Solutions and the creator of the PACE kit.
Just before I was recording this interview, we were actually speaking about how difficult it is to get a really good grasp on statistics about reporting sexual assault crimes in Canada. So can you expand on a little bit about why these statistics are so hard to grasp or to understand?
So sexual assault is a pervasive issue that's not only, of course, based in British Columbia and Canada, but across the world. And a large challenge in creating statistics around sexual assault is that not many people report, and it's not widely spoken about. Not only that, but traditionally, there has been a lack of focus on gathering that data, not only because it is so difficult to gather, but also because of a hesitancy towards talking about this issue, which has always been seen as a women's issue, but in fact impacts a wide range of people.
And the barriers for reporting as well are logical, racial, even geographical or religious barriers that keep people from reporting.
In northern BC and in northern parts of Canada, as you mentioned, geographical barriers are huge. You have people traveling 3 hours to get a forensic exam done, potentially down a logging road. And if the weather is not great, as it often is in the north, you're facing even further barriers. Another piece is people having to leave their community, and then there's a lot of shame and a lot of eyes on them essentially when they do leave. So it does create complexities in reporting. And then there's, of course, always the traditional thing of people blame themselves for what has happened. It is never your fault. But unfortunately, that shame at this time does live with the survivor rather than with the perpetrator.
Can you tell me a little bit about the federal research that you're doing? And if you can tell me how it applies to Northern British Columbians.
Yeah, so the current federal research that I'm engaged in is the barriers to accessing forensic DNA collection in Northern BC, Northern Ontario, and the Yukon. And so that research specifically has been speaking with survivors and rights holders within Northern BC about their experiences with reporting or not reporting sexual assault. And we've been engaged specifically in the Prince George area, also along Highway 16. And we've seen a lot of stories of people, if they do go to the hospital, they are typically being seen within 10 hours. But some of those people, if they are Indigenous, have experienced barriers from, let's say, historical experiences that maybe weren't so positive at the hospital. We also are seeing a lot of people who simply are not seeking any help at all because of those kind of barriers that we talked about previously.
Now, how did the PACE kit come to be and whose voices were heard in the creation and then now also evolution of Canada's first formal self-collection evidence kit and program?
So we worked with law enforcement, legal professionals, forensic experts, advocates, and also the communities that we seek to serve. So specifically, one of the communities that we seek to serve is the queer community. And so we engaged with an organization out of Vancouver called Community to actually review the manual and the forms to ensure that they are gender inclusive. We also worked with Indigenous consultants to review the formal process, however we do recognize it's an inherently colonial process. So it's more about building supports around the program if a First Nation does seek to engage with us.
Thank you to Lisa Schmidt, Erica Owens, and Chloe Hunt for their interviews in today's episode.
This is a CHY News update. A local theater group is finding ways to bring new and marginalized voices and stories to the stage. Through a mandate to showcase stories and voices that don't always see center stage, Western Edge Theatre is retelling a story that has historically been told by men. In Slavic folktale, Baba Yaga is a hideous elderly witch who steals, cooks, and eats children. But in a modern-day retelling written by Victoria-based writer Kat Sandler, the perspective is changed. Baba Yaga is now an attractive, smart, modern woman and anti-hero. In the supernatural thriller play Yaga, Western Edge shines a light on the strength of women and toxic masculinity. Western Edge artistic director and actor in Yaga, Jonathan Greenway, spoke to CHY about the play and how it showcases the effects of preconceived ideas around gender. He says the play follows a detective tasked with finding out what happened to a missing university student from a small town of Wichlock. This play highlights the vilification of women and the power dynamics of masculine roles within communities.
But it's a different perspective than we're told from like classic Grimm's fairy tales or the fairy tales of lore of Baba Yaga. It's a modern telling for 2025. It was written in 2019, but it's definitely a 21st century supernatural thriller from the perspective of Baba Yaga.
Greenway says the play's story fits perfectly with the themes of the three plays they are performing this season. He says he wants to offer opportunities to those not typically featured in traditional theater.
What I say is often in theater, or theater with a capital T, cis white males' voices and stories presented on our stages. Often in Canada we're faced, we get a lot of that, right? Or just these very white heteronormative stories. And I wanted this season to really exemplify alternative voices from the cis white males, and so...
Unboxing Bravery, the first show of their season, featured a story by a local drag performer, Lauren Semple, who shared their journey of gender exploration and transgender allyship through the art form of drag. Greenway says Yaga showcases the power women can have, alongside the supernatural feminine power that can destroy toxic masculinity. He says being able to share a story of feminine empowerment through an intense psychological thriller is not something that is often offered in NIMO. He wants to be an alternative to the theater with a capital T. He explains theater with a capital T as the traditional kitchen dramas and living room farces that often have similar themes to the other seven shows people have seen in the last 2 years. He says with Western Edge, they try to get out of theater with a capital T to bring something new for NIMO that is edgy and challenges conversations and perceptions around what theater could do. Wendy Weirin, who plays Baba Yaga, says while researching the stories of Baba Yaga, she was able to discover parts of the character in herself.
throughout history and time, women who are intelligent, gifted, loud-spoken, powerful, are often blamed for things. I think that's how the witch trials in Salem happened. I think today still, even in our decade, women are not treated as having good attributes that when they're seen in perhaps a male counterpart would be seen as positive attributes.
Much like Baba Yaga, Warren says women are very powerful and what they can do can often be considered magical.
I think women have a natural gift in this world and in this play, and we do certain magical things. We attract men or other women. We can give birth if we choose to. We raise a family. We can work. We can heal. We can do so many things.
Yaga will be shown at the OV Art Theater in downtown Nanaimo starting February 7th and running until February 16th on select dates. For CHY News, this is Laura McKenzie.
This report was made with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and listeners like you. You can find more news updates, interviews, and stories from our nonprofit newsroom, as well as our news and current affairs podcast, Midcoast Morning, at chly.ca/news.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or cfur.ca. In this week's personal ad column, carbon capture companies seek emissions partners in our area. The carbon sequestration companies CO2 Lock and Cielo Carbon Solutions are looking to draw the carbon out of a refinery, a pulp mill, a greenhouse, or some CO2 emitting facility in our region. The duo wants to take the carbon dioxide just over 50 kilometers southwest of Prince George between the northeast side of Naltespe or Bobtail Lake and the southwest corner of Bobtail Mountain Provincial Park, where a carbon sequestration project is taking shape. CO2 Lock, an FPX nickel mining subsidiary, and Victoria-based Cielo Carbon Solutions, the Canadian partner of Seattle-based Carbon Quest, came together to build an injection well there. Why here in north-central BC? Well, the area happens to be reasonably close to development infrastructure, and it hosts a significant deposit of brucite, also known as magnesium hydroxide. Often found next to nickel, this mineral has a rare ability to crystallize carbon dioxide. Upon pumping a water and CO2 solution into the deposit, a transformation takes place underground over a period of about 9 months, whereupon the brucite becomes magnesium carbonate, or magnesite, which actually has a role in agricultural fertilizer. Later this 2025, Cielo will initially inject about 200 tons of carbon dioxide with its first tanker and plans to ramp up its sequestration to 30,000 tons in 2026, with ambitions to reach up to 1 million tons annually. The project could run for about 20 years at that rate. But why do we need this? Well, this partnership sees itself as addressing a technology gap. While fossil fuels continue to be used in our energy distribution systems, this method reduces pollution and has the side potential to manufacture liquid CO2 for other industrial purposes. For insight on how this technology works and just how carbon dioxide sequestration can play a role in our northern BC economy, we turn to the CEO of Cielo Carbon Solutions, Jonathan Sipos, during the Future Fuels Forum held at the House of Ancestors, Ada Dune Bayo.
What are some of the hopes that you have for this industry and the future of it? And what are some of the central obstacles as you see it in getting that done?
Natural gas is critical to the British Columbia economy and to the Canadian economy. We cannot shut it down. We cannot slow it down. We need to embrace it. We need to use more of it. But I think there's a way to do it cleanly and responsibly, and that's where point source carbon capture comes in. Our technology allows us to capture up to 99% of the carbon dioxide and natural gas emissions. So when you burn it, combust it, we can get rid of 99% of the CO2, which can then be sequestered underground, in effect, making it green. You can just look at a compressor engine As one example, we're currently working on a deal with Tourmaline Energy and Emissions Reductions Alberta in conjunction with the NGIF to put a carbon capture facility onto one of their compressor stations outside of Edson, Alberta, to do just this, to capture the CO2 and make it green, which really brings down the carbon footprint of natural gas use, and I think really gets rid of the political hurdles that are facing increased natural gas usage. Applicable to Northern BC is distributed power generation. We have a tremendous challenge up here of getting power long distances, but we have a lot of natural gas that is spread out. What we could do is start using that natural gas either through natural gas-based generators, reciprocating engines, or if we're really trying to be forward-thinking here, start bringing in natural gas-based fuel cells, attaching carbon capture to that and generating clean power at a very attractive price to distribute our power generation, get rid of the large transmission lines, and really increase the durability of the electrical grid, all while supporting our fossil fuel sector. So we see the ability to generate electricity with natural gas and carbon capture as being a terrific solution for the next 25 to 50 years in northern British Columbia.
This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or cfur.ca.
You're out of order here, and can I have staff from outside come in? We're going to recess the meeting, and we'll come back when you're finished. Thank you.
What you just heard was from a Burnaby City Council meeting on January 28, 2025, where Council and Mayor Mike Hurley was interrupted by local activists from T-Rex Against TMX and Mountain Protectors, two local environmental activist groups, who awarded Council with a Dinosaurs of 2025 award. This award was given due to a closed-door agreement between Council and the Trans Mountain Corporation last September. This agreement would have the Trans Mountain Corp pay the City of Burnaby $20.1 million over the next 21 years to improve the city's emergency response program. This agreement has been heavily criticized by local environmental activist groups due to the fact that the deal also bans the city and the Trans Mountain Corp from making any negative statements about one another, fact, opinion, or otherwise. However, while this was going on inside the council chambers of City Hall, right outside the building was a rally protesting the Trans Mountain Agreement, which included chants.
Democracy looks like. This is what democracy looks like. Show me what emergency looks like. This is what emergency looks like. Show me what democracy looks like.
Music.
Fracking is. You won't be fracking long. You won't be fracking long. Wherever fracking threatens, we'll sing our fracking song.
And speeches from Indigenous elders, including Jim Layden, a land defender and Indigenous elder of the Coast Salish Watch House on Burnaby Mountain, Burnaby residents, a fire scientist, as well as nurses and doctors for the environment, all gave speeches during the rally. During many of these speeches, frustrations were expressed towards the council's agreement with Trans Mountain and how they believed that the mayor and city council had been effectively gagged by the deal, not allowing them to speak on the environmental safety concerns associated with the TMX pipeline.
Kim the Dino. We did disrupt the proceedings in there. We asked for an amendment to the agenda. We had two people request to be on the agenda of the meeting and were denied. So we interrupted. We told them, what did we tell them, Dino? We told them, yeah, we said, look, you know, gagging your staff from speaking even facts about Trans Mountain is outrageous. And $20.1 million to pave the road for all of those children and young people at schools and at SFU to lose their lives in a massive fire is inexcusable. So we want them to do better. We want them to step away from this agreement, which they can do. It just means they don't get any more money, which is fine. They're only getting like a trickle here and a trickle there, so.
Near the rally's conclusion, RCMP arrested a member of T-Rex Against TMX who interrupted council proceedings later on in the meeting to state their concerns on the TMX pipeline and the council's agreement with the Trans Mountain Corp. Tara Shusterian, a resident representative of the Burnaby Environment Committee and an organizer for the rally, witnessed the arrest and had this to say about what occurred.
So end of the rally, it was an extraordinary peaceful rally with a lot of, you know, choirs singing, people just singing protest songs, and, you know, people like nurses and doctors and, you know, fire experts coming and just giving us a lecture about, you know, what were the implications if there was a tank farm fire, and, you know, the health impacts, the, you know, evacuation, how we should do it. And it was absolutely a peace-loving, peaceful protest with just the dinosaurs dancing, and maybe one of the dinosaurs got a little exuberant and just went inside council chambers. But as I was telling your colleague, there are enough city security personnel inside the city, and they could have easily been escorted out by the city security. We did not have to get 3 RCMP officers brutally arrest this person, slam them against the the hood of the police car and then handcuff them like a ordinary, like a criminal. They're not a criminal. That's a peace-loving, young person inside that suit, which was just protesting, you know. So it's really a shame. I'm really ashamed of the way this whole thing has been handled by the city, and it just makes me very, very sad. And I think the citizens are going to look at this in, they're going to be really sad when they see something like this, an ordinary citizen. And yet you have rampant crime and nothing is done. And that's what I told the police officers also. Let's go arrest some criminals instead.
A day later, Police Corporal Mike Collange released a statement on the reasons for the arrest, which stated, on January 28, 2025, Burnaby RCMP frontline officers responded to a call for service at Burnaby City Hall in regards to a demonstration. When police attended, they noted a group of people outside City Hall peacefully singing and playing music. The people on site were listening to security direction. However, a short time later, one individual entered City Council chambers and was causing a disturbance by interrupting the meeting. The individual refused to leave and was arrested for causing a disturbance. She was transported to Burnaby RCMP cells. The individual was later released from Burnaby RCMP cells with no charges likely being forwarded. Once again, this statement comes from Police Corporal Mike Collange. On the night of the arrest, CJSF also attempted to receive comment from City Council on the incident. No comment was given. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby. This segment would not be possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
That's it for this week's Scoop. Catch us next week, Thursdays at 12 p.m. in Smithers, Thursdays at 4 p.m. in Burnaby, Fridays at 8 a.m. in Nanaimo, and weekdays at 7:30 in Prince George. The Scoop was made possible by funding from the Canadian government and the Local Journalism Initiative, a Community Radio Fund of Canada initiative.
Hi, this is Jesse Brown, the host of CanadaLand, Canada's only media criticism program. Every week I talk to some of the most interesting people in the country about some of the things that matter most. We talk about the news media, about comedy, film, music, and politics. And you can now listen on CJSF 90.1 FM every Monday at 5 p.m. Wait for it.
Quelle est l'importance de cette station pour vous? Une station locale, des nouvelles et des informations qui comptent. Vous ne trouverez rien de tel ailleurs. Maintenant, nous avons besoin de vous, de votre voix, pour soutenir l'initiative des radios communautaires. La radio a été là pour vous dans des moments importants et maintenant c'est à votre tour. Vous pouvez vous joindre à la lutte pour l'avenir de la radio communautaire sur monirc.ca. Encore monirc.ca, des voix locales qui façonnent notre communauté.
If you want to explore unique perspectives that are rarely expressed in mainstream media, you are listening to the right channel. This is CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC.
Good day. You're listening.